This is The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker. Our weight. When it comes to understanding the psychology behind the regulation of body weight, we can often find ourselves conflicted with many weighty questions. These can include how the body regulates energetic intake and expenditure, how hormones play a role in body weight regulation, and how our genetics themselves influence body weight. As a biological organism, we are very adept at acquiring and storing energy. Most of a vertebrate's energy reserves exist in the form of fat. Yet when it comes to turning these fat stores into energy and effectively maintaining a healthy body weight, many factors contribute to how effectively our bodies perform this task. For example, age, gender, genetics, and overall health can all affect the efficiency of the body's metabolism. Diet, exercise, and stress can also have a significant effect as they all impact the way the body processes calories and stores fat. On the surface, it would seem that these factors alone would be easy enough to navigate. However, our day-to-day lives are much more complex than this. Diet and exercise are often difficult to stick to, and stress is a fact of life. Making changes to these factors is often difficult. Joining us is quantum life and health coach Dr. Cody Goldman. As we examine our energy today, we not only discover how it helps us manage our weight, but also how we maintain our daily routines. Combined with uplifting psychological principles, Cody explains how natural ways to regain our health result in a safe hormone reset that leads to a healthier and more energetic you than you ever imagined. Tune in to find out how when we return to The Light Inside. We'd like to offer a shout out to our affiliate matching partner, Podmatch.com. Podmatch is the revolutionary podcasting matching system driven by AI. As an industry leader in podcast guesting and hosting, they are a go-to solution for creating meaningful podcast interactions. Podmatch.com makes finding the ideal guest or host effortless. Stop by and visit our affiliate link today at www.thelightinside.us. How we see ourselves is not always an accurate representation of who we truly are inside. Body image, that mental portrait we paint of ourselves, often strays from reality, a mirage that doesn't always reflect our physical appearance. The media, family, and peers can all play a role in shaping an individual's body image, contributing to this self-deprecation and planting seeds of inadequacy and insecurity. But amidst these distortions, let's not forget that our body image is just a fraction of our identity. It's crucial to nurture the other dimensions that make us whole. For example, patience, kindness, and resilience. Joining us is Dr. Cody Goldman as we embark on a journey to reclaim a healthier perspective and embrace the multifaceted essence of who we truly are. In today's episode, we're peeling back the layers of our self-perception and exploring how it can diverge from our true selves. Cody, I'm excited to look at the factors that shape our ability to form healthy weight regulation habits and also discuss the unconscious factors that at times disrupt these processes. Let's dive in if we may. Stress, depression, sleep time, and physical activity, along with dietary patterns, all play a role in weight gain. This episode is designed today to explore how unconscious patterns influence these factors and significantly affect weight gain. To begin today, can you summarize the importance of healthy weight regulation and how this affects our overall holistic health and well-being? Let's start broad.
So yes, just so people understand also where I'm coming from, you know, I've worked with thousands of people for over 20 years. I was a chiropractor at first, and then had a big healthcare center. And I was helping people heal from all different kinds of ailments, like breast cancers, digestive cancers. I had people heal from some severe stuff. But there was one issue. I was never interested in helping people lose weight. It was never of interest to me. But what I noticed was my patients were going to do Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, Paleo, Keto, South Beach. You can list all the fad diets. The problem was I was watching them and they would go and lose weight. And they would lose maybe, let's say, 10, 15 pounds, and then they'd gain back 20. It's called yo-yo dieting. And the problem with it is that they'd tell me like they got harder each time to lose weight. Okay. So I said, well, that's interesting. And that kind of sucks too, by the way. 80% of weight loss programs in America fail, meaning 80% of them you gain all the weight back and some. So when you asked your question about the importance of this, I want to just say, number one, of course, people feel into the aesthetics of it and what do you look like and not be able to feel, you know, for women, not being able to fit in your clothes, not wanting to go to the beach, not wanting to be intimate with your husband because you don't like how you look. Those are important things. But if we really address what's really going on, excess fat is linked to the top three leading causes of death. So this is an important piece. This is very important. When you look at our cardiovascular problems, you look at diabetes, cancers, so strokes, right? So we know for a long time that this is really the big issue. Now, there are so many things behind this, but the importance, if someone doesn't really care about, well, you know what? I'm going to die anyway. Who cares? Let's talk about just your current functioning in your current body. Not so much what's going to happen in 10 years, but right now. When someone has excess fat, there's such a big principle here that I think people will really appreciate. When you enter this planet as a little baby, when you're born as a fat burning machine. Your hypothalamus utilizes fat because fat is the best fuel source you have. You have steady energy. You wake up on time. You go to sleep and sleep well. You don't have ups and downs of energy. Your mental cognition is sharp. Your emotions are easy to balance when you are a fat burner. So I'm kind of tying this in with your question about what's the importance of this. People usually don't think about it from this angle. However, years of emotional stressors, drinking alcohol, which is what people usually do to manage emotional stressors for the most part. And of course, there's many other things they do. And eating sugars, breads, cereal, rice, pasta, your brain and body become efficient at burning the fuel you give it. So when you give it a lot of sugar, it becomes efficient at burning sugar. Now I'm bringing this up because you know you're a sugar burner. If it's hard to wake up in the morning, you get poor sleep, you're having energy crashes throughout the day, you feel like you got to drink coffee to get your mind back on track. These are all the results of being a sugar burner. So if excess fat leading to the three leading causes of death don't interest you, well, the current time space reality of being in a body that feels sluggish, maybe they'll be of some interest. So that's really where I come from in this.
We are all often conditioned to focus on those two core patterns of diet and fitness, the level of activity we have. From that aspect, Cody, what role does emotional regulation, mental fitness, and psychological comfort each play in maintaining healthy weight balance and regulation?
Great question. I'm glad you asked this because honestly, most weight loss programs don't focus on this. That's why this is a unique thing. I'm not saying this to plug this, but I think this is something that's important. I've just wrote a book called The Four Secrets to Permanent Weight Loss. And the reason I mention that is the fourth secret is exactly the answer to your question. It's called the emotional rewire. So I work thousands of people through the physical aspect of this, but the emotional rewire is very important. So let's just give some examples I think you'll really appreciate. I've got an example in the book. We'll call her Miss A. She was one of my chiropractic patients and she wanted to lose weight. So we put her on our weight loss program. And in 40 days, most of our patients lose 15 to 35 pounds of fat in 40 days. Well, she lost weight, but in about a month, she started gaining it back. And that was a concern to me because I said, listen, I don't want to do the same thing that everyone else is doing. Why isn't this permanent? Because when people do our program, the hormones are reset. So we actually reset hormones with our program. So if someone's gaining the weight back, it was kind of concerning to me. We started having a conversation. And what happened was when she was a little girl, she dealt with some abuse from the male figures in her life. Mm-hmm. We make decisions as kids that whether or not they're right or wrong, we make decisions. She started noticing that her beauty and her body was getting attention from men. Now, when that happens in the unconscious mind, we will create strategies to become unattractive so as to not deal with attention from men. One of the unconscious strategies is to put on fat so people don't notice what your body looks like. And so you become unattractive. This was a strategy she took as a little girl. Now, she at the time working with her, she's in her mid-30s. So when she lost this weight, when she lost a significant amount of weight in my 40-day program, it's a problem. This is where I first learned this because now, yeah, you lost weight, but the problem is you just lost your cushion. You just lost your cushion. And now you start becoming more attracted to men. You can see the unconscious and the emotional wire here, right? So that's an important piece to understand that aspect. We had to rewire this. And there's a process that I run my clients, my patients through of rewiring. And if you want to go into that now, if that makes sense, Jeff.
How essential is healthy body image when considering our perspectives on healthy weight regulation and overall fitness or holistic health?
So let me say it like this, because most people, as you said, are wired to diet and exercise. Now, if diet and exercise worked, we really wouldn't have all these weight loss programs. This is what's so funny. Now, is it diet and exercise aren't really the problem. It's how we're doing the diet and exercise. So number one, most people are hypnotized. I'll use that word specifically, are hypnotized to reduce their calories to lose weight. Okay. So most people think, I've got extra weight. If I cut my calories, I'll lose it. Well, you will, but you lose the wrong type of weight. Anytime anyone does a calorie reduction diet, the first thing you'll see in the first 7 to 10 days, you'll lose weight. You'll lose some fat. After 7 to 10 days, you stop losing fat and you start burning muscle. Why? As cave people, when we were living in caves and we didn't get consistent Burger King in our lives, we couldn't go to the grocery store. We had to go shoot and find food. That means it was very inconsistent. Your brain is wired with something called the anti-starvation mechanism. That means that when you get food, your body's fine and it releases fat. It'll burn fat. When you don't get food for a period of time, your body, your brain is smart enough to store fat because fat is the best fuel source you have. So your body stores fat. So feel into this. Whoever's listening to this, if you reduce your calories to lose weight, you're telling your brain and body to store fat, not get rid of it. This is why it's such a bad idea. Paleo, Keto, South Beach, all of them. Calorie counting, it's all based on reducing your calories. Calories are a measurement, a unit of energy. You need energy. That's like saying, hey, my gas tank, I'm going to try to keep my gas tank really low and still have enough energy. No, it doesn't work like that. You can't drive very far. You reduce your mileage. So that's the first principle in terms of diets. Addressing your question about exercise is when someone is eating, let's say 1500 calories a day, I'm just making this up, 1500. And let's say they exercise and they go up to 2000 calories. They've burned 2000, they ate 1500. They now have a 500 caloric deficiency, which means you trigger fat storage. So most people with diet and exercise are burning into their muscle. When you break down your muscle, you break down proteins, it is one of the most unhealthy things. You feel like shit. You feel lethargic. You're tired. So that kind of gives you a little description to answer that question.
Cody, stress plays an essential role in how our body manages allostatic load, with this contributing to conditions that trigger hypermetabolism. How does this affect our body's natural demand for extra caloric intake when we're stressed?
Yeah, it's a good question. I love this question because when I run someone through our Fast 40 weight loss program, it's one of the coolest things is if you're doing a weight loss program and you don't learn what your body needs after the program, this is going to fail. In other words, don't do a weight loss program that you can't keep doing for the rest of your life. Now, I know people hear me saying that, but guess what? If you're dieting for 4 weeks and you can't keep dieting, what do you think is going to happen? So the reason I bring this up is because we make sure that people learn how much food they actually need. And I'll give you a live example. Let's say I've got a woman who's going through the program. Typically, people lose about a half pound to a pound of fat a day. But let's say on day 14, all of a sudden, you know, she goes, oh my God, I didn't lose weight today. Here's my first question. When is your menstrual cycle? And they go, I don't know. Why does that matter? Because you need more calories to go through the menstrual cycle. So they go, really? I didn't know that. Yes, ladies. When you go through your menstrual cycle, eat more. Why? When you think about the process, your body is literally sloughing off old cells and tissues and rebuilding. You need more calories. This is not the time to starve yourself. So that points to one thing. If someone is having a stressful job, fight with their husband, I actually train them. I coach them because I coach people every single day during our program. I coach people on, you need to eat more food. They go, what do you mean? So check this out. This is cool. So let's say, okay, listen, I say, listen, for 40 days, I have people really reduce their exercise because I don't want them going over the caloric burn. Okay. But I have people that go, well, I did a big speech. Like it was in front of a crowd. I did a big speech and I didn't lose weight. They go, did you eat more food? No. Why would I eat more food? Because you burned more calories. Your thoughts, your mind, your brain burns 20% of the glycogen storages in your body. Your brain's not 20% of your body in terms of proportion. So when you are having a stressful day or you're really working hard mentally, you need more calories. So what I really make sure people do is start figuring out how to put in the proper amount of calories. 100% of the people that go through my program, they start off as fat and starving themselves. They end up fit and lean and eating 2 to 3 times the amount that they would have eaten before the program, because they now understand how much they actually need. Starvation doesn't work to lose weight. It only works to make you sick.
You know, that runs counter to most of our social conditioning that says cut calories, cut calories, cut calories.
Yeah.
In that regard, it's easy to see where that can become frustrating and trigger some of those emotional responses, emotional reactions, especially, that can arise.
Yeah, you're totally right, man. It definitely can. And when we start weaving in, like you've mentioned, the emotions in here, let's say someone's angry all day. My patients know if I'm angry all day, I literally need to eat more. You're just burning more calories. People don't think of it like this. You think because you walked a mile or walked 1 mile, that's only burning calories. But like, what do we think is happening when you think thoughts? Again, you burn 20% of your glycogen, your energy storages with thought. So I mean, that's why someone can be relatively lethargic, but be really working intensely hard on a project and still need to eat more calories. So really, it is an important piece for, like you said, for people to understand this is if you have more intense emotions, let's say you have an intense spiritual experience. It's not just bad emotions. Let's say you experience high levels of joy and excitement. You need to eat more calories. So same way on both sides.
Our emotions are nothing more than pure energy at their core. That, to me, reflects back on that idea of allostatic load, which is essentially just our body's ability to assess the energetic burden on its core systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that regard, looking at our health patterns themselves, healthy patterns of both sleep and rest are shown in numerous studies to have an influential impact on weight regulation. How do you feel these factors come into play also?
Oh, great question, Jeffrey. I can feel, yeah, we're definitely aligned energetically on this. So it's kind of the next things that was coming to my mind too. You're going to love this, man. So after working with thousands of patients and seeing people who have done the gastric bypass and stapling stomachs, and so I've had people spend $32,000 on weight loss stuff to gain it all back, right? Because there's no shortcut. Like, get someone to actually help you do this the right way and coach you through it, because you are not a body. You have a body. You're not a mind. You have a mind. You're a being that's operating this mind. So you've got to work with the body, mind, and soul to really get this done right. Okay. So sleep. Without the proper sleep, you will not lose weight. There's just simply like that. And here's an example. Have someone who's losing half pound, a pound a day. And then next day they go, Dr. Goldman, I only lost 0.1 pounds, or I gained 0.5. And then I ask questions, you know, did you eat enough? Did you eat on time? These are all important things. And they go, yeah, I ate on time. Oh, I went to a concert last night. Well, what time did you get home? 1 in the morning. What time did you wake up? 5. Okay, wait a minute. You got 4 hours of sleep. And my question is, how did you expect your body to prioritize fat loss? And they go, what do you mean? Well, at night, your cells and tissues repair themselves. Your brain cells, your vital organs, heart, circulatory system, they all repair at night. If you only get 4 hours of sleep, your body's very smart and it goes, listen, I'm going to repair vital organ tissue, but I'm not going to prioritize fat loss. Yeah. They go, oh my God, I never knew that. Yep. So I think that probably says it all right there, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, we also look at that fact that we don't go into that complete energetic shutdown or slowdown to allow for some of that metabolic uptake to happen.
Yes. Yeah. You pointed to rest and sleep, which is an important point, because it's not just sleep. It is rest. Meaning, here's a big one. You know, I mentioned about the concept of being sugar burner and fat burner. And the first week, we have people remove all sugar, all of it. Most people have an addiction to sugar. Sugar has utilized the same receptors in the brain as cocaine. So you go through withdrawal. And what happens is in that first week, people are kind of wonky all over the place. If you're a sugar burner, you need a lot of coffee. You need coffee to wake up and coffee to stay awake. And what happens is you're spiking your adrenal system when you do that. So when people's hormones start flipping with the program and they start burning fat as the fuel source, fat has 9 calories per gram. So this protein and carbohydrate has 4. Fat has more than double the energy content per gram. So when you start using fat, you just switch to a jet fuel. Therefore, people stop having these ups and downs. So I'm pointing to this because it's important that people listen to their body. If you are tired and you drink coffee to continue on a project, you just overrode a vital repair process your body has. And then 10 years down the line, people go, I don't know how I got cancer. Well, when you didn't let your body repair, that was how. I mean, it's that important to listen when you need to rest. This is in the innate intelligence of the body saying, my heart needs repair, my lungs need repaired. You know, but we judge that we need tons of energy. We judge, I shouldn't be tired. No, you should listen to your body. It is quite wise. You got 60,000 miles of arteries and veins in your body, and it's circulating red blood cells and oxygen to every single organ and tissue. Whatever is doing that is pretty damn smart. So when it tells you to be tired, I think I'd probably listen.
Looking at some of those patterns, we're somewhat conditioned to them again, to things like eating through our lunch break or not eating through a lunch break, or constantly being in motion to try to complete our to-do list, lacking sleep because we're overachieving. You'll all become kind of unhealthy associations. Some of those associations being driven by social triggers or social stigma. How might those things contribute to becoming a cognitive distortion or avoidant coping mechanisms? And how does that contribute to unhealthy stress that leads to overeating or ineffective diet?
Great question, Jeffrey. I think really important to understand, each human being has two states of their nervous system. So it's called sympathetic and parasympathetic. And what you're describing is our infatuation with sympathetic. Our society puts sympathetic on a pedestal and has put parasympathetic on the pit. And here's how we've done this. When you look at commercials go like this. Are you tired? Are you sleepy? Have you been having negative thoughts? Do you have low energy? Take this pill. Well, everything you just described was a parasympathetic normal state. Sympathetic has been called fight or flight, which means, it really means if in the wild, you can fight something or you run away. Okay. But in this day and age, what's happened is when we look at the stock market, we go into sympathetic fight or flight. Fight or flight is normal, but you weren't intended to stay in fight or flight. Society has encouraged people to stay in fight or flight. And what happens when you do this, this is all energy output. It's all cell breakdown. The parasympathetic is called rest and digest. It's where your system literally turns off, tells you to rest, tells you to sleep, and tells you to digest food. Most people don't realize they're having severe digestive problems. They're having thyroid problems because they literally are bypassing parasympathetic function. So listening to the wisdom of the body, it's important people have that framework now and understand that both are very much needed for you to function properly. Matter of fact, a lot of Olympic athletes now are focusing not just on the sympathetic training, but they're focusing just as much on the parasympathetic rest and recovery time as well.
Cody, gender identity has been shown in several studies to drastically affect body image and weight regulation. How do you feel these factors contribute to our ability to form healthy associations and effective weight regulation?
Yeah, so from my standpoint of helping human beings, the gender does not change anything except when you feel into the menstrual function. Every human being, both male, female, and whatever gender, has the hormones called leptin and ghrelin. So our bodies function exactly the same, regardless of gender, right? So leptin and ghrelin are hormones that tell your body to be hungry or to be full, right? Leptin and ghrelin are the hormones that tell you to burn fat or burn sugar. So there isn't too much of a difference, but when you really feel into the female biology specifically, if there's a menstrual cycle, that for sure needs to be taken into account. And I know I mentioned that just about eating more food. And of course, emotions may come up there as well. Now, there's a lot of research too that the male biology, the male physiology, I should say, has a sort of menstrual cycle. It's not a menstrual cycle, but it has a almost periodic changes, right? But the physiology doesn't require the same amount of caloric intake. Many times when I work with a couple, man and woman, in this case, the ones I'm thinking about, I had a man who was 6'7", 350 pounds, and the wife was 5'4", and maybe only 140. She, on my program, was eating more than him, And it was because she was going through the menstrual cycle. But at the same time, he was burning over 100 pounds of fat off his body. When you burn fat off your body, remember 9 calories per gram, you're getting excess calories in. So there is a little bit difference of when you look at it from the standpoint of what's going out from the menstrual cycle itself.
Cody, share with us the role both brain structures and hormones play in healthy weight regulation.
Yeah, let's look at it from, let's kind of combine both. Okay. So there's a part of the brain that's called the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus does many things in terms of autonomic regulation, but it does regulate, like we mentioned, the leptin and ghrelin, those two hormones. And I love talking about hormones because, at least in our current time space reality, women specifically are hit with all kinds of stuff about, oh, you're 40 and you're 50 and your hormones are causing this. And I like to call BS on this stuff for people because, and women usually love this. They go, yeah, it's not because I turned 40 now that I'm tired. I'm not fit. No, the body wasn't designed for that. When there's excess stress, divorce, traumas, breakups, job changes, excess stress typically leads to increased sugar intake for most people. And I'm talking about alcohol, bread, cereal, rice, pasta. Matter of fact, if you take the old food guide pyramid and you look at the bottom, our good old FDA recommended that people eat the largest amount of servings for bread, cereal, rice, and pasta. All those things break down into sugar. And so reason I bring all that up is because I mentioned when you go through stressful times and you drink alcohol and you're eating sugars, you're basically telling your body what you want it to process. With excess sugars, the hormones flip and they start accessing sugar as a fuel source and they forget about fat. So that's really important. And what we do in our program, we actually help flip the hormones. If you just go on a diet and you don't make a hormone change, you're going to gain that weight back because there's no significant change. You just basically starved yourself. But if you can get your hypothalamus to now utilize leptin and ghrelin to use fat as a fuel source, you now have a permanent hormonal change.
In that regard, looking at the role of the brainstem in the autonomic nervous system in regulating our hunger, how might they affect our body's ability to regulate our sense of satiety or fullness when looking at hunger regulation?
Yeah, I mean, interesting when we look at the hunger because we, let's say unconscious and conscious. Let's say subconscious and conscious. Subconsciously, you have a power running your body that built it. The power that runs your body is the power that made your body, and it's still in there. Okay. So when you take that from the subconscious level and you separate that to the conscious mind is the educated mind that goes, oh, I know what I need to do. So what I'm pointing to is, the educated intelligence can be hypnotized into thinking that it needs to starve itself or overeat or whatever. And what I love to do is actually pull people in and point them to their innate intelligence inside. Over the 40 days, the reason I started coaching, because before I was doing this without coaching people. Now I coach people every single morning. Someone checks with me, Dr. Goldman, I'm down 1 pound or I'm down 0.5, right? One of the coolest things is I realize is most people have no awareness for what hunger really is. Genuinely. I find that by day 14 in this program of what I work with people, people are like, wait a minute, you're telling me that's hunger? People usually skip the small signs of hunger and they wait until what they call starving. The small signs of hunger. Has you ever had someone ask you, let's say, for example, hey, are you hungry? And then you go, oh, I mean, I could eat, but not really. Yeah.
I'm guilty as charged.
Yes. That's when you're hungry. I want everyone to hear that. Eating.
Yes.
That is actually when you're hungry. In other words, when someone says, are you hungry now? I guess I could eat. That's when you're actually hungry. Well, you'll notice if people go, okay, let's wait. Let's say we wait another hour or two. At that point, someone goes, oh my God, I'm starving. Okay. What happened in those 1 or 2 hours? You just bypassed your body's innate wisdom to eat. Okay. And you started digging in and activating the anti-starvation mechanism. You just told your body, I'm not going to feed you when I tell you you're hungry. Right. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to store fat. So what we have is a lot of people starving themselves and getting fat because of it. That kind of says it all right there.
When it comes to mobile service providers, with their high rate plans, extra fees, and hidden costs or expenses, many of the big name networks leave a bad taste in your mouth. Mint Mobile is a new flavor of mobile network service, sharing all the same reliable features of the big name brands, yet at a fraction of the cost. I recently made the change to Mint Mobile, and I can't believe the monthly savings, allowing me to put more money in my pocket for the things which truly light me up inside. Making the switch to Mint Mobile is easy.
Hosted on the T-Mobile 5G network, Mint gives you premium wireless service on the nation's largest 5G network. With bulk savings on flexible plan options, Mint offers 3, 6, and 12-month plans. And the more months you buy, the more you save. Plus, you can also keep your current phone or upgrade to a new one, keep your current number or change to a new one as well, and all of your contacts, apps, and photos will seamlessly and effortlessly follow you to your new low-cost Mint provider. Did I mention the best part? You keep more money in your pocket. And with Mint's referral plan, you can rescue more friends from big wireless bills while earning up to $90 for each referral. Visit our Mint Mobile affiliate link at thelightinside.us/sponsors for additional mobile savings or activate your plan in minutes with the Mint Mobile app.
Around lunchtime every day, you hear somebody say, "Hey, G yet?" "No, G." "You want to?"
Perception of hunger is shaped by a complex interplay of psychological, social, and self-influential factors. Psychologically, our past experiences, emotions, and stress levels can amplify or diminish our hunger cues. Social, cultural norms, mealtime routines, and the presence of others can sway our perception of hunger. Additionally, self-influential factors like body image, dietary beliefs, and self-control also play a role. Paradoxically, external influences can lead us to eat when we're not hungry, succumbing to societal pressures or emotional triggers. While external cues, such as advertisements or peer behavior, can induce binge eating episodes that bypass genuine hunger signals. Our early ancestors often found themselves struggling to meet this task. Although the need to feed and nourish ourselves is essential for our survival, we now live in a society where this task can, at times, be taken for granted, and the act of eating can become a recreational sport. Cody, there's that fine line between hungry and what we've come to know as hangry, or that emotionally triggered response to eat. I'd like to look at that a little deeper in a moment. You mentioned earlier that interesting point, how neural disruptions such as autonomic activation, you know, sympathetic activation, dorsal vagal shutdown impact those hunger mechanisms. If we might, let's shift our focus a little bit to some of those emotional triggers and some of those unconscious emotional patterns.
And that's a good question. I think I like that because what this really is, and it's not a scientific word, hangry, but it really is a great word, I think, you know, because it says it. But basically, it's a real feeling. And, you know, like I said, when someone, you get a little bit of an inclination, you need to eat, but because you've consciously judged your subconscious patterns consciously, you go, "Oh, I don't need to eat. I should reduce my calories." Stop doing that. When you bypass your body's wisdom of telling you to eat, you basically start dropping into low blood sugar. And that's when people become irritable and start having anxiety. That's what that is. Now, there's basically not enough glucose getting to the brain when your blood sugar is low. So this is why people start feeling like shit. And they start affecting like the glucose levels, and they start affecting insulin. It is like, you guys must eat. So our patients, our clients, are trained to eat on time. We actually scheduled to eat on time. I do this with myself also. It's too easy this day and age to get busy with your family and kids and work and skip eating. Like when you're involved in a project, very easy to skip eating. So the best way to avoid hangry, it seems like a funny thing, is listen to your body. Eat when you feel hungry. Stop starving yourself, because you're basically causing a big problem for yourself with the low glucose levels.
From that aspect, what do you feel are some of the core factors that contribute to the conditioned beliefs that drive some of those unhealthy habits? You know, we looked a little bit at social cues and that social pressure as a factor. Are there additional ways that surfaces?
And you mean specifically, yeah, what causes those hypnotic beliefs? And I use the word hypnotic. For 10 years, I trained on hypnosis. Okay. So I understand it very well, and suggestion. And there's two ways you'll appreciate this. Two ways to enlodge an idea into the subconscious mind. It's with repetition and emotion. Mm. Now, those two ways, when combined, become very powerful. So something repeated enough into your mind with a strong emotional state becomes enlodged into the subconscious. So like if I say Aflac, most people know what that is.
Yeah.
They know it's the duck from Aflac. Now why? Because that damn duck repeated itself over and over. And it was a cute little duck and they were trying to tap into people's emotions. So very important. There's a whole topic of conversation we can go off on with this one. But when you look at the media and TV and what I have seen put out by weight loss programs, it is basically feeding people the wrong information. And this is why we decided to create this program. Let me tell you, there's a current trend. I'll just address this right now. There's a current trend called semaglutides. They are basically, it was a pre-diabetic or as a diabetic, a type 2 diabetes medication or injection. And what started happening is people started losing weight. They go, oh, wow, maybe we can do this for weight loss. Well, now people go to the doctor. They have this Ozempic and there's another one injected in and they lose weight rapidly. They don't have to eat right. You don't have to exercise. You don't have to make any changes. There's a few big problems with it. Number one, the box says that they test this on rats and it caused thyroid tumors. Number two, if you lose weight without making any pattern changes, you're going to gain it back. And so that's what's starting to happen. So I bring all this up because when you look at the media and the medical system and how much they're influencing people to go lose weight fast, take this injection. No, it's basically subconscious suggestion that you can lose weight quickly and you can do it without having to go through the pain of doing it right. So this is where a lot of this has come from. Most of it is from weight loss company advertisements telling people they can do it the wrong way.
So as we look at some of those unconscious influences, what role do childhood experiences play in influencing our mental frameworks that we form some of those beliefs from?
It's really big. This is from zero, from birth to about 7 or 8. They say that a lot of the subconscious patterns are created, and both the parental figures in your life formulate most of these, right? And so I've watched, as I mentioned that story about the woman who had a trauma from a male figure. I mean, she basically decided that she didn't want attention from men. What was the impact to her? She's trying to avoid relationships by keeping fat on her body, right? There are so many ways to go through this, but the main thing is that we will make decisions as a kid. And of course, traumas will affect us. But let's say you didn't have trauma. I wasn't abused as a kid, but I certainly made decisions about my life that are still impacting me now. And so you can even hear your mom or dad say something, which they could have said it in just an instance where they were angry, but didn't really mean it. And you adopted it as a truth. So the impact of the stuff that happens as a kid, I'll give you an example. We're working with a patient many years ago as a chiropractor. She was in her 80s. Now, this was a chiropractic patient, not one of my weight loss patients. But I remember talking to her and I asked her, like, why do you go to bed at 10 o'clock at night? Why not go at 8 o'clock? I remember we're just having a conversation about when she's in bed. She was like consistent at 10 or 10:30. And she's 80. Okay. And she said exactly this. Well, it's because that's what my daddy taught me to do. And I thought, oh my God, she's in her 80s, but the little girl inside is still there. So those of you listening to this, you know, I have a separate coaching company of someone when we go into these spaces about why we do what we do, but I learned to parent the inner child is priceless. The inner child is there causing you to do things, the things you don't know what you just did. You go, why the hell did you just do that? Why did I yell at that person? Most likely inner child. So there you go.
So that dives into that pool of ego development that can itself be loaded with a lot of those preconcepts in how we see ourselves, how that concept of self, what level of ego regulation, I'll say, we're engaged with. You know, are we looking at first, second, third perspective? Are we able to zero out to a fourth person's perspective that sees ourselves as a separate mechanism in that process? It's an area we've looked at a lot throughout the course of our program.
Yeah. I mean, I won't go into too much detail this, but I had an experience of almost dying. And it wasn't a trauma, an accident. It was an inner poisoning from Lyme bacteria and parasite. And I couldn't walk for 6 months. My brain was poisoned. My body was poisoned. And when your body and mind don't work, where do you go? That's why I can tell you with certainty, you're not a body. I'm not a mind. I'm not a body. But I floated outside of my body and I looked back at myself as the observer. And so you are an energetic being that is operating this thing. You can put on whatever dress, skirt, pants you want to put on to to play this avatar, but you are an energetic being outside of this time and space. And so you do have an incredible viewpoint as the observer. Sometimes the observer believes that it's 40. Sometimes the observer believes that it's 80. Sometimes the observer believes that it's a man or a woman. That's the cool thing about this reality is we all have a sense that there's something behind who we really are. And to me, tapping into that really gives someone quite a high level degree. I don't want to use the word control, but of influence and in working with this incredible power in our lives.
That's a great instance to interject here as we kind of tiptoe up to some future episodes, looking again specifically at our energetic field and how that interacts, who and what we are as beings. Looking at that role of some of those existential questions we often have. We often battle with that role of pleasure and pain or hedonic adaptation when we're dealing with weight regulation. From that aspect, Cody, what role do you feel hedonic adaptation plays in weight regulation?
Oh my gosh. I want to look this up because I know what this is, but I want to actually define this. It's the notion that after a positive or negative events, there's an increase in positive or negative feelings and people return to a relatively stable baseline place. So I love that because the hedonic adaptation, let me address this from the standpoint of, you got some really good terms. I've just been like enjoying these because people don't typically bring this stuff up. Let me bring in this. There's a universal law of polarity. It's hermetic philosophy. And there's seven laws. One of them is the law of polarity. And the law of polarity states that you can't have positive without negative. This is an important piece. Most people resist this. I resist this. It's like trying to live a positive life. People go, why do bad things happen to good people? Because there's a law of polarity. If you go up, you're eventually going to go down. If you infatuate with something in your life, this is important to hear. If you infatuate, which means you put it on a pedestal. So let's just say you go, oh my God, that person is so amazing. Eventually, that person is going to be put in the pit. Okay. I was infatuated with having perfect health. That brought me to my knees and almost dying. So I love looking at it from the standpoint of a bigger picture. Okay. Your body swings in and out of positive and negative. You're awake. You must be asleep. Our conscious mind doesn't want to believe these things, but it does happen. And the law of polarity says that the more positive you are, the more negative you're going to have. The more negative you are, the more positive. It literally bounces itself out. But the negative and positive are normal states in this reality. When you look into energy and we kind of talk into our beings energetically, negative and positive are an illusion when you look at the being itself. Physically, it's there. But the place to really be at is when you can combine a perspective of both positive and negative on a subject and see that it is neither. That's when you truly have love and appreciation for someone or for yourself as well.
You know, that to me ties in great with a program I'm watching now on Gaia, looking at sacred geometry.
Yes.
Again, tiptoeing up to those future episodes, looking at how our energy patterns affect us. Looking at that idea of Taurus, or how we're kind of an energetic funnel. Finding our energetic center is not going to our middle and becoming stuck. It's aligning with that middle and allowing those energies and polarities to flow through us. Both finding our grounding and our awakening, our opening consciously, simultaneously.
I agree with what you're saying, man. I mentioned to you about outside of my weight loss coaching, I do individual coaching. It's very special. I won't do it with everyone, but what it is, I was shown a process of letting energy move through you. Meaning most people are trying to let positive energy in and resist negative energy. It's a big mistake. Stop doing it. It's a big mistake. Energy is not negative or positive. Your mind is labeling it that and refracting it into being good or bad. When I went into death, darkness, and dying from the illness I had, and I dove in, is when I started truly living. The things we resist eventually become the things that we either attract in our life, become in ourselves, or breed in our kids. If you're resisting negative energy, you're missing out on the other half of God.
Cody, that is such an inspiring message to hang with today.
Yeah.
Finally, in closing today, if you could offer us three tips on factors that influence and inform healthy lifestyle adaptations and the associations that contribute to long-term well-being. What might those three tips be today?
Ooh, I love that. So number one, let's take that first one. Learn to let all energies move through you. If you don't know what I'm saying, I'd recommend getting the book called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. That'll help you out. Have you read that one, Jeff?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I've listened to it 16 times to try to figure this piece out. Okay. Let energies pass through you. There's nothing more I can say that right there. Okay. That's number one. If we then move away from the energetic space and move into our bodies and minds, number two, let's look at the mind. So that'd be an energetic being. Number one, number two would be the mind. Allow yourself to find the good and bad in all things. That's from the mind. Number two. Number three, and this is from the physical. If I had one thing I could get people to do is I would encourage people to become a fat burner in the physical plane, because I've watched as people have better relationships burning fat instead of sugar. By the way, sugar, when you burn sugar, it has many, many toxic byproducts. Cancers use sugar to metastasize. Cancers don't use fat to metastasize. So on the physical plane, get your body, get your hormones switched from burning sugar to burning fat. So those are three suggestions from a being, energetic being, or a soul, the mind and body.
I can't think of any way to sum this up better today. Where can our guest reach out to you, Cody, to learn more about your programs and discover a healthier path to weight regulation?
Thanks for asking, Jeffrey. If someone's interested, go to fast40weightloss.com. It's called fast40weightloss.com. And cool enough, by the time this episode gets out, I just launched a book, as I mentioned, called The 4 Secrets to Permanent Weight Loss on Amazon. So either one of those, and you can contact me. I've got some free trainings. I love working with people. I was put on this planet to ignite and inspire people, and I look forward to helping you.
What an amazing resource for us to reach out to. I'd like to remind all of our listeners to reach out and find that book. Thank you for reaching out with us today, Cody, and giving us a new path, a new light, and a new perspective on how we address weight regulation and that flow of energy that travels through us. Namaste, my friend. The light in me acknowledges the light in you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your fantastic questions, your ability to communicate and organize and get this thing done. I love what you're doing. Thank you.
I truly, truly appreciate that positive feedback, my friend. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep shining that light on the world.
Yeah, I will. You as well. Namaste.
Take care, brother. Namaste. In our discussion today, we emphasize the transformative role of energy alignment in not only cultivating healthy weight management and body image, but also in creating our optimal state of being. Our conversation underscores the pivotal role emotional regulation plays in these dynamics, recognizing its impact on our overall health and well-being. We also touch base on the power subconscious beliefs have in shaping this journey, and the essential role our energy alignment also contributes to not only healthy weight regulation and body image, but also in creating our optimal state of being. Utilizing this knowledge, may it allow you to uncover the interconnectedness of these elements and gain insights that can empower your holistic growth. If you found this episode meaningful, please share it with a friend or loved one. And as always, we're grateful for you, our valued listening community. This has been The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker.